welcome to the Haber Show. As always, I'm joined by what I used to say was ESPN's Amin El Hassan. But now, what do I introduce you as?
Oh, now you got to give me the multi-pronged intro where I am Lebatard Show's Amin El Hassan, also SiriusXM's Amin El Hassan, also Cinephobes Amin El Hassan, and Bombs Amin El Hassan, and also now the Haber Show's Amin El Hassan. How about that, Tommy?
I like your tone there. You kept going up. You got your voice got higher and higher as you added credentials to your list. That was really impressive. I listened to the Lebatard pod yesterday. It seems like they offered you a job on the air.
Yeah. you know, it's funny because I was talking to my agent about it, and it's like, it's working there is like being permanently in an Andy Kaufman bit.
Yes.
You don't know when the joke is over and we're being for real. So the whole time I'm like, are we joking? Am I in? I don't know. Am I in? And they kept saying, oh, but you're going to work for free. And I'm like, ha, ha, ha. And they're like, wait, are they serious? Because Dan texted me last night and he was like, how did it feel today? And I said, to be honest, I was kind of surprised. I was expecting a lot more of either a mixed response or just more negativity. And it was just so overwhelmingly positive that it kind of threw me off. You know, I'm not accustomed to that. And he said, what do you mean? I said, look, I don't call myself Darth Amin because I'm the hero of the story. Like I'm usually the bad guy. And to have this kind of, reception was kind of, it took me aback. And he says, that's how we're paying you, with applause and congratulations. I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure my mortgage won't accept that as a form of payment. So let's just be clear.
I love that they interviewed you to be the replacement for Stu Gatz while Stu Gatz is on the line. And they're basically asking you like, hey, how come you would be a good fit for this company and replacing Stu Gatz? And I'm guessing you're improving that, but it was impressive.
Yeah. I got it. I got a text from Mike while I'm driving to the studio here to record, to my little studio, the Death Star studio. And Mike says, by the way, we're interviewing you for Stu Gatz's job. So I was like, ha ha. And that was it. That was all the prep I had. And on the way there, I just kind of thought about Stu Gatz, right? Because I knew I didn't know Lefko was on, but as soon as they said Lefko was here, I said, he absolutely dug in his Rolodex and brought like Dwayne Wade or someone on the show. That's Lefko's move. Like, Lefko's the guy. When Katie Nolan did her impromptu Zoom party back in April, early in the pandemic, and it was, do you know about this?
No.
Continue. Hey, we got a visitor. You don't have to crawl. Hey, what's up, Ellie? How's it going? You look like, what's it called? The bear crawl or whatever.
She just did an army crawl across my office here to try to get out of the screen. It didn't work.
Sorry.
were saying? Yeah.
Yeah. So Katie Nolan does this. She sends a Zoom invite and says, look, I'm trying to do this thing here. We need you to get the most famous person in your phone book, but you don't tell them what it's for.
Right.
Just see.
Did
who
she do
you
that
can get
in the here. In the like early pandemic?
Yeah, early pandemic, right? And it started. I think I had the first celebrity on was courtesy of me. It was Jaleel White, Steve Urkel from Family Matters. Jaleel White is a good friend of mine, but I couldn't tell him what it was. He thought it was actually a Zoom of me. Like we're chopping up. I was like, wait, what are all these people doing here? And then it just started skyrocketing after that. And Mike Ryan brought in Lefko, and Lefko just brought in heavy hitters. I mean, Lefko was bringing in heavy fucking hitters. And I was just like, Mike took credit. I'm like, no, Mike doesn't get credit. You don't get credit for Lefko's hard work.
Yeah.
You know, he was very much so. But anyways, I digress. I went in there and I said, look, Stu Gatz comes down to three things. Like, he's a grifter. He's going to look to cut corners, and he's going to be, you know, what was the third one? I can't remember what the third one was.
I mean, chemistry. Yeah, I think you mentioned chemistry or something.
Oh,
like
chemistry.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all about chemistry. It's not, the show isn't about guests. It's about the chemistry of the other people. And if you're filling in for Stugatz, you got to replicate what Stugatz brings to the table. And I said, I can do that. So that was my pitch.
It was great. And then you also did some basketball takes. They brought you in and asked you NBA questions and you answered those. That was impressive too. But things have changed, Amin. Since you were asked about the Brooklyn Nets, you had a very boilerplate question about, what do you think about the Nets this year? And by the way, I faded the Nets this year. And after the first couple games, I felt like, oh, you know what? That was a bad pick. And then the season really started to hit them. Should we get into this now? Do you want to talk about Kyrie? Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, what's the latest? The latest I have is the videos of him at his sister's birthday party. Right.
And an investigation has been opened where the league is now reviewing the videos that are circulating about Kyrie Irving.
Like the protocol, right?
Right. The videos purportedly showing Kyrie Irving at his sister's birthday party.
No, they don't purportedly. They show him at his sister's birthday party. She's blowing out a cake. It says the number 30 on it. And he's standing right beside her with a big smile on his face. It's his sister's birthday party and he was there.
And there's at least over a dozen people there. And I don't understand how Kyrie doesn't, first of all, just say, hey, no phones. We're not doing phones today. Like,
so when I went to the Star Wars red carpet premiere, right? The first one I'd ever gone to. We got to the, you know, you walk the red carpet and they basically just funnel you into the theater, right? You know, they just want to keep it moving so that once everyone's in, they can start the movie. When you get to the front of the theater, there are these neoprene sleeves. They say, put your phone in this. And then they lock it, and then they give you the sleeve. So you can never say, they lost my phone or whatever. You got it in your hands. You just can't access it. I know that Dave Chappelle does this for a lot of his events. It started with All-Star Weekend in New Orleans. He had a big party out in a plantation somewhere where everybody went except for me because I wasn't invited.
Yeah, well, didn't Jamal Tinsley write about this? Was it Tinsley?
Justin Tinsley wrote about it. Yes. Jamal Tinsley, I don't think, was there. I think he's somewhere in Brooklyn right now, drinking a 40. No, Justin Tinsley Justin Tinsley wrote it on pen and paper. He wrote all his notes on a notepad.
Scribbled it down.
Because nobody had their phones available to them. Shout out to Pablo Torre, Bomani Jones, Rachel Nichols, Tracy McGrady, the intern who made it, everyone who went except for me. But shout out to Michelle Beadle because me and Beadle tore up bourbon instead. And that was a lot of fun. So anyways, the point being is in this day and age, the standards have been set. Movie premieres, exclusive parties like this one. Everybody, phones in a bucket or phones in these sleeves. You can hire the company to do it for the night. Again, all it takes is someone to hand out the sleeves, make sure it's locked, and then someone at the end of the night to unlock it, right? Because it's kind of like the if you look at the security tags on clothes at a department store, right? When you go to the cashier.
I used to work at Banana Republic. I know what that is. Yeah.
There you go. They pop the thing off. So it's the same concept. So, like, it's just insane to me, especially when you talk about this isn't 500 people at a party. It's a fairly small, intimate event. Bro, it's not that hard, man. Shell out the extra 2 G's or whatever. Have this company come do it. And have peace of mind that you can dance as awfully as he danced and it'll never get out. Did you see the video of him dancing?
Saw a little bit. Well, there's like a long video. I just saw like a few seconds of it.
I saw. Let me see if I can play it for you. You, not for the listener, but you. The 13-second clip. There you go. And there's no audio, so.
He's performing. I mean, he's got
it. You know what it reminds me of? Do you remember in 2014 when we went to the finals in San Antonio? We walked the River Walk, and that was some of the fun content we used to make where you would write a story and then me and you would have like an experience tour of the city while talking about the article.
I sweat. All I remember is I sweat so quickly through that shirt.
Yeah, it was pretty gross. It was pretty gross. Tom's picnic blanket shirt was ruined.
Gingham, but also black and white gingham. Yes.
Yeah. Up on Gingham style. I remember we walked by a restaurant where they had the mariachi guys were walking around on the Riverwalk, kind of playing, and you started dancing, and I told you to stop dancing. That's what Kyrie looked like. He danced exactly like you.
Well, it so must you can really say good.
I dance like a future Hall of Famer.
That's right. I don't know if he comes back. I mean, I don't know if he, like, the more I see what's happening with Kyrie, I just don't think he gives an F about it all. He just doesn't. Because this video, it's not just that one person rogue camera. It was like a bunch of people there in attendance, like videotaping the proceedings, the party.
Right.
So he's got to know all this stuff is going to get out. And meanwhile, his teammates are like, you know, whatever's going on with him. Like, I want to give a shout out to Kyrie, and like, I'm praying for him. I'm thinking about him. Hope everything's going okay. And his teammates are being asked about it every day. And yet, it's just, I don't know if he's oblivious. Like, what?
I'm gonna say this. Yes, it is possible to have a serious thing going on in your personal life. And also to surmise that I need to get my mind off of this and supporting my sister on the day of her birth, which, by the way, is the same day of her dad. Their dad, right? Their dad has the same birthday, or it's around the same time.
Around the same, yes.
It's Dred's birthday around this time, right? So, like, I get it. I don't want to be like, if you're going to be sad, you got to be all the way sad in your room or whatever. Having said that, you have to be cognizant, or the people, you know what's funny, Tom? I could say he has to be cognizant, but in reality, his supporting crew has to be cognizant. Much in the same way that when Jonathan Isaac, like, stumbled his way through the softball-iest of Taylor Rooks's questions. Taylor Rooks didn't come at him with venom. She gave him a fairly straightforward question that one would expect if you were going to take this kind of stance. And he absolutely botched it. He just completely shat the bed, right? You have to know, I'm going to do this. This is going to come after it. And so if that's the case, yo, it's Asia's birthday, no phone.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have videographers.
We're going to have a good time. We're going to have a good time, but this is going to be a private affair. This is us.
We're going to have pros to shoot this, and we'll have a picture booth. We can do all those things. But none of this is going to get out. Hey, man, I went to my cousin Ebe is the president of Dreamville Records. Went to his wedding. No pictures got out. Cole was there. Like, I mean, pictures came out eventually after they decided, okay, these are the ones or whatever. But that wasn't an issue. We knew how to, like, play it cool. Don't post anything. Don't be on Instagram. It's not hard. And again, part of it is on Kyrie. But to me, I always put the bigger onus on the supporting cast. You're the motherfuckers that don't got to do shit. You go back to your job tomorrow. Nobody knows who the fuck you are. He's the one where he does shit. It's going to be a news story. So you have to look out for him if you're really his friend or his business partner or whatever, his agent. And if you're not doing that, now, if Kyrie was taking selfies and putting it out, there ain't nothing you can do. But you can limit and restrict everyone else's access to kind of social media.
It did feel, watching the video, It did strike me, Amin, about how the world we're living in right now is that every little video, or even when I flip through Instagram, I see like my buddies hanging out or my, some distant relative hanging out in public. And that's like a recent photo. And I immediately think like, ooh, COVID. You know, if you're like publicly gathering or if you're not wearing masks, it immediately hits us. Even like Christmas cards that I get, it just, I'm instinctively now been conditioned to like think, they're not social distancing. And when a video pops up of Kyrie Irving celebrating his sister's birthday, I got a little Big Brother-ish feeling of like, I it feels invasive that I'm watching this and saying he's doing the wrong thing. Like, do you feel like a little bit that this has got the surveillance of that the NBA season has become just way too invasive? Is that a guy can't go celebrate his sister's birthday?
But
without
Tom,
being like, there's a little part of me who feels that like sympathetic that this is, this just sucks. It just sucks.
Tom, it's not normal times.
I know. I'm admitting there's
two rings, right? The outer ring is all of us. Whether you're a garbage man, whether you're the CEO of a company, whether you're the governor of California, right? We are all held to this standards. Hey, social distance. Don't be indoors with large groups of people. Wear your mask. Wash your hands. We're all in this. This is a global thing. Well, not New Zealand because they fucking fixed it already.
Yeah, but they have an advantage. They're an island.
They're an island. Yeah, they don't have to worry about assholes coming every fucking day, right? But
they get it all.
But the reality is, again, like we're all in this together. We all have a group social responsibility, right? But at the end of the day, it is a social responsibility. It's not a social obligation, and it's not a law. In some places it is a law, but in many places it's not a law. I can have people over at my house right now in Arizona. It's not against the law. It's stupid, it's dangerous, it's unnecessarily risky, but at the end of the day, I'm not breaking any laws. So you might be breaking your social contract with society of doing what's right, but you're not breaking any rules per se. But then the inner circle is that of NBA players. These are rules. They are written on paper. They did give it to you. They did let you know. They did make an example of the bearded one down in Houston. I was just making sure my girlfriend, my homegirl was a boss, and now I can't like celebrate her being. No, you can't. That's why they put it on paper. That's what they told you. Hey, 8 million deep invasive nasal swabs, and you're suspended until you clear them. And for every game you miss because of this, we're docking you a game check, which is not 1/110th like it used to be. It's now 1/172nd. A lot more, right? This shit is real. Regardless of whether you think the pandemic ain't real or ain't serious or this is fear-mongering or whatever, doesn't fucking matter if you're an NBA player or an NBA personnel. Because these are the rules of your workplace. And if you don't like it, then fucking take your ass to China or the New Zealand League, or the NBL. Go play in New Zealand. He's got an Australian passport. I'm sure that's good for something. And then he ain't got to worry about it. But no, there's no like, oh, he's just celebrating his sister's birth. Like, no. No. And that's why, Tom, I don't sit here saying, you knew better. You shouldn't have. I say, bro, if you're going to do that, this is how we're going to do it. Mm-hmm. You're going to cheat. This is how we're going to cheat. You're going to break rules. Let's do this smart, right?
You There's can't be break consequences rules about, for your actions, yes.
You can't break rules about, why are we doing? No, it's already done. It's like the people who stormed the Capitol building, and then they're surprised they're on a no-fly list. No, you don't get to go back to work like nothing fucking happened. There are consequences for all this. And so for Kyrie, it's just, if you wanted to do this, there's a way to do it. And by the way, you can't even say I didn't know about the rules, because he, of all people, can't have that excuse, because guess what? He is a vice president of the Players Association. Bro, you got that memo before everybody else did. Before it goes to the players and it gets ratified, it goes to the NBPA first.
What do you think Kevin Durant thinks of this? I think he's saying, come on, man.
That's the part I'm curious about, right? Because from the very beginning, a year of almost 2 years ago, when they signed there, I likened it to becoming roommates in college with your best friend. Oh, we're best buddies. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Every time we hang out, it's the best time ever. Yo, you know what? We should live together. Oh, it'd be nonstop fun. And then you realize, fuck. Oh my God, he clips his toenails in the sink. Oh my God, can you do the dishes? Can you take out the trash once? And like
the things that you like about him is that he's relaxed, he's a lot of fun, and he makes me laugh. All these things, and you're like, man, that guy just never stops. Like I just
whatever it is,
yeah,
whatever it is, you were insulated from it because you only saw him or her at like specific times for specific purposes. For a specific allotted amount of time. And now it's 24 hours a day. And all those things, either all those things that were pleasant are no longer pleasant when they're doing 24 hours a day, or you discover the new things about them that you didn't know because you weren't around them 24 hours a day. That's what I always imagined this relationship to be.
And I think Kevin Durant would be, of all people, I think he just wants to hoop.
I think so too.
And so for all these, I don't know if you want to call them distractions, but it is going to be something they're going to have to every day talk about and be asked about.
He's not playing. That's not a distraction. A distraction is if he's playing and it's like, hey, man, it says here you were at a party last night. Ah, that's no big deal. That was actually old or whatever. That's not what's happening here. He is not playing. He is saying, I'm not available. And he did it without telling anybody, by the way. Didn't tell the coach, didn't tell the GM, didn't tell his teammates, right? Like, I don't care how much of a Kyrie apologist you are or pro player or whatever. Like, at some point, we have to acknowledge there is a bare minimum of common courtesy that you owe the people you work with.
Can we just call it it's unprofessional what he's doing?
More than unprofessional. I used this example on the radio with Zach Harper. I said, Zach, what if I told you I'm going to pick you up and we'll take you down to the car lot so you can get to the mechanic so you can get your car. Meet me at 3 o'clock right outside your house. And Zach says, fine. At 3 o'clock, Zach's waiting at 3:05, 3:10, 3:15. And he texts, doesn't hear anything. And he calls me, doesn't hear anything from me. And around 3:45, he runs into you. And you say to him, hey, Zach, what's going on? What you doing? He's like, oh, I'm waiting for Amin to pick me up. He's supposed to take me to the mechanic. I'm like, oh, no. Yeah, Amin said he ain't doing that shit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You got to hear it from someone else?
We've all worked with that person where it's like, just communicate. Just give us a heads up if you're going to be out. And the other thing is, to go back to his support staff or the people who are around him, like, they didn't seem to know either. Or they didn't reach out to the Nets and be like, hey, like, Kyrie's dealing with some stuff. It seems from my perspective, it hasn't been a story that I've read, is that, hey, Kyrie's people reached out to us and said he's dealing with some personal issues and he is out indefinitely. It seemed like from what I have read about Steve Nash and the organization is like, yeah, we reached out, haven't heard back.
The answers indicate that they're in the dark. And again, what I said on Levitard Show and I stand behind is, this is when Steve Nash separates himself from all the other coaching candidates. Because he's a guy with an emotional intelligence level for the peculiar, because he himself was a peculiar guy.
Yeah, can you tell the people, remind people what he said about the Iraq War?
Yeah, so in 2004, when being an athlete, being outspoken was not a thing, nobody did it. And more importantly, in this country where the political climate was that of we stand unified, Hillary Clinton voted yes on Iraq invasion and the weapons of mass destruction and all this stuff, all that shit. It was like a death sentence to stand up and say, I don't know about this, guys. What does it have to do with Al-Qaeda, right? Or 9/11.
And he's two-time at this point, right?
Steve Nash? He's either one or two-time. He's definitely right in the middle of being MVP of this league. The spotlight is as bright as it can be. He said, this shit is wrong. He's like, no, I don't support this. This is an act of aggression and da-da-da. In a red fucking state. He didn't do this shit in the Bay or in New York or Chicago. He did it in Phoenix fucking Arizona, man, where the airport is named after Barry Goldwater, one of the most staunch Republicans ever, right? So he knows what it's like to have that burden of a greater societal issue weighing upon you, and I have to go play this game at 7:30. He's been there and had people question his intentions, his motives, and all that. He's been there. He knows what that's like. So he's a guy that can relate on a level that, no offense, Jason Kidd couldn't do that, because Jason Kidd never had to do that. And Mark Jackson couldn't do that, because Mark Jackson was never that caliber of player, right? It's not a knock on these men that they're not good enough to coach.
But there's only a few people on this planet who can relate to what Kyrie Irving
is doing. Yeah. For this particular job, I'm not doing the Paula Abdul, you're not right for this competition. I'm literally saying, for this particular job, given the personnel that they had, Steve Nash was the right guy for the job. Now, though, is the time where you got to prove it. So just because he doesn't return your calls and all that shit, Steve's got to find a way, because you're the one. He wasn't going to listen to you know, I don't know, Jacques Vaughn about this.
Kenny Atkinson, right.
Or Kenny Atkinson or whoever. So we'll see. We'll see how this goes.
Yeah, that's a problem. And I mean, beyond the whole on-court stuff that they have to deal with, the fact that they can't stop a refrigerator, right? Like they can't play any defense. Like there's this whole other thing: is how often is Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant going to play together? How often is that going to happen? We're asking that question about just about every duo in the NBA, because it's just such a weird season. But I don't know when Kyrie comes back. There is a small part of me that says, I don't know if he comes back, period. Because
you think so? You think he's done for the year? I don't think so. I don't think you can sit around and talk about being an artist and all that shit and then literally just abandon. Like, imagine if, you know, Prince did all that talking about like being an artist and the record label is like a slave master, da, da, and then decided, you know what? Not going to make music anymore. I'll go over here and hang out with my sister.
No, he can still play, or he can still be active in the basketball community and not play for an NBA team. Like,
retire? You see him retire? I think that's drastic even for him. I don't think retiring. He's not.
At the very least, he could. I think he could walk away this season and just be like, I'm opting out.
Just Megatron. He's not going to Megatron it. He's not going to Barry Sanders it. The guy's got two more years. Tom, he's got like $60 plus million.
I don't know if that matters to him. I legitimately don't know what drives him. Because I thought it would be basketball.
Tom, remember when he said he wasn't going to talk to the media and he put out a press release? And then they said, well, okay, well, it's going to run you about this much. And that motherfucker next day, like, hi, guys. That was just a one-time thing. I'm like,
yeah, but then he goes and does this. I mean, he goes and does this. But
he's pushing boundaries.
Took one week of him being like, I'm a good sport. I'm going to be a good teammate. And then he goes and does this.
He's pushing boundaries. He's trying to see how far he can go. But what I'm saying, I bring that up not to say that he's going to be a good soldier or whatever that means. I say that to say he's not walking away from $60 million. And if he does, then fuck it. I respect the shit out of him. Right? Like, if it's like, yo, you're owed this much. Like, no, my principles are worth more to me than $60 million. Then fuck it.
Absolutely. As long as those Nike checks keep clearing.
Will they keep clearing?
I don't know. Because
the language in those contracts is very, very, very detailed. I talked to the guys who know the sneaker deal world. Like, it ain't no, oh, yeah, but you could never play again and you still get your money. No. That's why Derrick Rose kept playing when it was like, you have one leg. Because that hundred or some odd million dollar contract wasn't just going to pay itself for him to be sitting at home. Unless you can prove yourself, I guess, some sort of different type of influencer. Is Kyrie that? Is he?
I think he is.
Maybe.
I think he is.
Is he influencer enough where people still wear his shoes?
The rebellious beats to the own rhythm, drums to the beat of his own drum. Yeah. What is it?
Marches to the beat of his own drum.
I feel like that kind of plays into that.
Rhythm definitely doesn't play into that if you watch that video of him dancing.
Or me dancing. I would have no concept of rhythm if you've seen me dancing. I'm no Pablo Torre, you know? Hey, Amin, Our guest today on the Haber Show has the longest list of credentials I have ever seen. Like, the job title is just endless. So Renee, I'm going to try to do this justice, but you just jump in if I missed anything. Okay.
Yeah, you got it. I'm definitely not adding anything, I can tell you.
All right. In one breath. Renee Montgomery, current WNBA player, most recently played for the Atlanta Dream, former WNBA All-Star with the Connecticut Sun, and two-time champion with the Lynx, current Atlanta Hawks TV analyst on Fox Sports Southeast. I can't do it in one breath. She's officially a TED Talker, co-host of TMZ Sports, which you can find late night on Fox Sports 1. She's also the contributor to LeBron's More Than a Vote initiative, co-owner of the FCF Beasts, and host of the Remotely Renee podcast. Renee, welcome to the Haber Show.
Ten titles.
Listen, I like that. Thank you for the introduction. I'm going to clip that. Thank you. I like it.
Yeah, which one of those are you most proud of? It's got to be the FCF Beasts, right? You're now a co-owner of a football team.
Yeah, to be owner, I've never kind of had that type of title before. Usually just player, talent. So to be owner, that's different. But I'm not gonna lie, TED Talk's a different type of excitement because my family, like, they're all scholars. And so I've always done things in the sports world. So I live in the sports world. So whenever I do something like outside of the sports world, yeah, that gives me a different type of satisfaction. So I would say all of it, starting my own podcast too. This is hard. Like, you're doing it right. This is hard. So having Remotely Renee is pretty hard, but enjoyable. It's that labor of love that we talk about.
Renee, we all know that family are our harshest critics. And you said you have a family of scholars. So what was the harshest criticism you got about your TED Talk?
Oh man. I think that they dove into it. They were like, what? They had you doing a TED Talk?
That is a criticism, man. If they were like, wait, did they get the wrong person?
Exactly. That's hard. By the way, I don't know if you guys know, but like, they want you off book for long speeches. Like, I did one of the mini speeches and I thought that was a doozy. There's people that do like 20 minute TED Talks. There's repeat offenders for TED Talks. I'm like, how? I felt like I was studying for like the LCAT, all of that. Like, I felt like I was really studying and preparing for like something, a big test. And the test was me remembering my lines. And when I say my lines, I wrote the speech, but you know, to present it in a powerful way, it's my acting, like, you know, my improv, everything, like, it was hard.
Yeah, no class at UConn is going to prepare you for that.
And I'm a communications major, so just to put that in perspective, like, these scholars are everything that they are built up to be.
Well, Renee, I can't imagine what this past week has been like for you. All of the stuff going on in the country, and not just that, you're covering the Atlanta Hawks in your day job. You got your podcast. But bigger than all of that is what happened today, last week, January 5th, the election in Georgia. What was that day like for you, being on the front lines and trying to get as much of the vote out there?
So January 5th, we're talking about, it was nerve-wracking, you know, because it's almost like, well, I've done all I can do. Like, let's wait and see what happens almost. And as we saw on November 3rd, you don't even know if you're going to find out the results on January 5th. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like January 5th is going to be, well, when are we going to know? Fortunately, we knew about Senator Warnock, you know, that night, and I stayed up for it. I was kind of like waiting. Like, because the same thing happened in the presidential election. Things happen like at the late hours, and I didn't want to be asleep. So it was just more so just kind of just hopeful. I just felt very hopeful.
Renee, I want to ask you a question moving back a little bit. When was the first time you realized that one of the owners of the team you play for was problematic? Let's put it that way.
I would say the same time you realized it. You know, the letter hit the internet and we all watched it the same time. Like, it's not like they sent us a memo beforehand saying, hey, this letter was sent. When it hit the internet, when I saw it on Twitter, you know, I think I probably saw it the same time you all did. So that's kind of when, and then it wasn't any, it was black and white, you know, it was cut and dry. I was like, oh, okay, so here we are. Like, you know, that's kind of, I kind of found out the exact same way you did.
So like all your interactions, or I don't know, even know how many interactions you'd had with her prior to then. She just seemed normal.
Yeah. And you know, like, think about the conversations that a player would have with the owner anyway. We're not going to be like dapping it up right before the game at tip off being like, hey, what are your views politically? Like, you know what I mean? It's just not really a conversation you have. I've never had that conversation with any of my team owners from any of my teams, just to put it in perspective. So it's kind of one of those things where you don't know until you know.
Right.
Yeah. Cause I'd imagine you're not like vetting all of your owners or minority owners in the organization before you sign with a team. And then not like, I can't imagine having that as my quote unquote boss, you know, is like, do I speak up? Do I say something? Should I risk my employment or being ostracized from my day job to speak out for what's right? And that's such a tricky question. You answered it by saying, I'm going to opt out of my contract with the Atlanta Dream or the season in the Wubble so I can focus on social justice issues. And then literally your team is embroiled in this controversy and you're having to decide, like, I got to say something, right?
Yeah, you know, for me, it like when I opted out, I was more so thinking about a George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery. So when I opted out, those were my thoughts, you know, and then, well, add it to the list when you saw the letter, you know. So it was more so like, well, this is exactly why I'm opting out. I'm trying to make a change. I'm trying to change thought processes, perspectives, trying to just change the way we think because it's time. Like, we should be past this. And so whenever I saw the letter, that was just something to add to the list of reasons I was already opting out.
What's that feel like, by the way, to, I mean, I think it's kind of crazy. So I saw this, someone posted this last Tuesday, where the day your teammates all came dressed with the Reverend Warnock shirts, Loeffler, I don't know how to say her name.
Loeffler.
She was polling at about 40-some percent. Yeah. And then there were a couple of people. And then Reverend Warnock was at like 9%.
Yeah.
And basically 6 months later, give or take, he's the first black senator in the history of the state of Georgia.
Right.
How does it feel like to know that you guys, that wasn't a great, you know, it wasn't like you guys were the extra little push to take him over the top. Yeah. You guys were instrumental and central in his victory campaign.
Yeah, you know, for me, it's crazy because when I opted out and I set out to make a difference, you know, like that's kind of what my impact, like what my thought process was. How can I make an impact? How can I turn one moment into like a momentum and just keep it going? I would have never dreamed that's the type of impact we could have had as a collective. To me, I was just trying to see what I could do here in the community in Atlanta, because that's where I'm at. And I'm like, well, you know, everybody's talking about changing the world. So let me just minimize it and try to just focus on Atlanta and see what I can do here. The historical presence that the WNBA had and has, it's crazy to think about. You know, it's kind of like when you're an athlete and you're in the moment, you're not necessarily thinking like, oh yeah, we won the championship. You're almost thinking about your next championship. That's just kind of how it works. I don't know, but like in the moment, it's hard for me to just really take in, you know, the historical relevance that it has. But I'm so happy. Like I'm so happy to be a part of this. I'm so happy to be on the right side of history, because a lot of people, I don't know if a lot of people realize which side was right or wrong for a long time. I think January 6th made a lot of people realize, oh, wow, we might be on the wrong side of this thing. You know, I think that was the moment where a lot of people realized it. But, you know, I knew when I wrote her the letter back, you know, I knew what the right side was. So I'm so thankful to have been on it.
Have you spoken to her?
I have not.
Did you expect to get a response?
Yeah, has she ever tried to reach out at all to any of you?
I can't speak for anyone else. I can only always speak for myself. And so I reached out kind of at the time when everybody knew I reached out, and I kind of just left it there. You know, I just left that invitation out there to see if she wanted to talk. Some people don't want to change their mind or they don't want to talk, and that's fine. Like, I would rather talk to people that have an open mind about changing their mind, because if not, you're almost talking to a brick wall. If somebody really doesn't want to hear what you have to say, but they're still listening in a sense, it's not, you're not going to get very far. So, you know, she must not have wanted to talk.
If she wants to talk, what do you want to tell her? What is the objective of that conversation going to be for you if she wants to engage?
I mean, if she wants to engage, I'd love to hear what she had to say, you know, so that would be more so on her rather than me. But, yeah. You know, I kind of put it out there that you have a WNBA team, the Atlanta Dream, who my teammates all play for. And so it would be on her to see, you know, what she would have to say, because she wrote the letter.
You mentioned January 6th. We all woke up and started watching the news. And as the day is unfolding, what's going on through your mind?
I was actually on set. This is so crazy. I was on set with TMZ Sports, and I get a text from my snook, which is my mom. And I look down and she wrote, "Olympus has fallen." And I'm like, what? I seen that movie. Like, I know what that means. So what does she mean? Almost. I'm looking at her like, what in the world? I'm still on set. Like, I'm on air. So I tell everyone else, like, you know, I tell them, my mom just texted me and said Olympus has fallen. I think there's stuff going on. Meanwhile, this is TMZ, so you could imagine that they're like, you know, they're like on it. They're like, oh snap, the Capitol Hill. Like, you know, and like, we have to finish this segment. We have to finish this episode. So I literally like had my phone sitting, like I'm sitting in this exact same seat. I have my phone like up streaming the news as I'm on set, just kind of trying to see what is going on. And I mean, obviously, we no one could have expected how bad it was going to get. Well, I guess we could have now, seeing the aftermath and seeing how planned it was. But yeah, it was a shocking moment.
Yeah, because for me watching it as a white man, it was, I think, in some ways,
you're white?
Yeah, believe it or not, in some ways. I don't know. Wait, like, I'm Greek Chilean. Did you know I'm part Chilean too?
No.
Yeah.
No, I think he was asking me. I was about to say, I didn't even know you were Greek. Like,
yeah. My middle name is Kalakis, so that probably helps you out there. Watching it was so clear to me why this was such a big story beyond the violence and that. It was the fact, the double standard was so plain to see that when minority or black protesters are peacefully protesting, the kind of police enforcement and behavior and conduct they have and numbers that they have versus what we saw at the Capitol. Was that what hit you too, is just how plain and how just, I mean, no pun intended, black and white this was?
Yeah, you know, it is black and white, pun intended, in a sense of you can just... They like, if anyone needed proof, because a lot of people, it just, they have a hard time believing that this is a reality. They have a hard time believing that there's still this level of racism. I mean, there was a noose out there. I'm just throwing that out there. It's 2021. There was a whole noose out there. There were an uncountable amount of Confederate flags. We understand what that stands for. So I always look at things in a certain way. I think that moment, January 6th, it was shocking for a lot of people. For the black and brown community, not very shocking. Like, we're not shocked. We already knew this. We kind of already been saying this. Even when I threw a pop-up block party and it was talked about mob mentality for our protests, I know we've seen that on the news, mob mentality, all these different things. And I'm like, what? I just threw a cookout. Like, this is not a mob. Like, I knew that. We already knew this. But I think that there was a lot of other people that just didn't know how blatant it was until January 6th, when they saw a large group of terrorists entering the Capitol Hill. Like, I think that a lot of people were shocked. Like, the black and brown community, again, not shocked, because when we had our peaceful protests, you saw all the resistance. So I think it's good sometimes for people to see it, for it to be in your face, because now you can't ignore it.
One thing that happened that day that got lost in the mess that was the Capitol siege was LeBron said he wanted to buy the Atlanta Dream or lead a group to buy the Atlanta Dream. And yeah. Renee, you jumped in and said, let's go. Like, yeah. I'm here. So what is the status of, I don't know whether it's the LeBron-led group or your interest in buying the Atlanta Dream. Like, where do we stand on that issue today?
Where we stand is that I love that LeBron brought attention to it. You know, like, I think that just even that tweet, and I know it's crazy, like, the power of social media, we see it. Twitter had to suspend, you know, Donald Trump's account. They had to, because it was toxic. So just the power of social media, no one can deny it. So LeBron just even tweeting about our team and the situation our team is in, you know, I'm thankful for it, because people need to see what's going on. People need to understand what's going on in sports. It's not just our team, in sports.
You know what I don't get? I've always thought about if Kelly Loeffler's, her ideals and her worldview run so opposite to all the things of diversity, right? Regardless of whether she thinks she's a racist or not, or a homophobe or any of those things, it doesn't matter. She's got her worldviews where these things are important, right? Why the hell she buy a WNBA team?
Well, that's like the question of the hour. I want, like, you know, people wonder when those views changed. Because if you buy into a WNBA team, you're buying into certain things that you just, you know, alluded to. So that's kind of what everyone's question is. Was your views always like they are now? Or if not, when did they change? Because being an owner of a WNBA team kind of comes with a lot. You know, it comes with what the WNBA stands for. And I think that's what people are really excited about the WNBA for. Like, wow, these women, this is not the first time they've done this. And I'm like, no, it's not. Like, we've been doing this. This is like, this is my second time around. In 2016, we did something. So I think people are starting to see, wow, the WNBA really, this is part of their identity. And so I always like to shed light on, again, the positive things. I know that, that's a big story, but the bigger story is that a Black man from Georgia will be the first one that's entering the Senate from Georgia, and also a Jewish man from Georgia will be entering the Senate as a senator. I think that's the story, and you know, we haven't even talked about that yet.
Georgia's blue.
That's a story, you know, like, it's the way that you have to combat history is you have to talk about the important things. And so I always try to make sure when I'm doing these things that I know everybody wants to talk about our situation, our ownership. We won here in Georgia. And, you know, that's barely being talked about, that the first Black senator, that's barely being talked about, that the first Jewish man, like, no, well, he's not the first, but a Jewish man is coming from Georgia. Like, that's pretty amazing. Like, the reason that there's so much turmoil is because, first, the presidential election was won by Joe Biden. Vice President, shouts to my Madam Vice President, Kamala Harris. That's a big story. The second big story is that we won. It's a clean sweep, 3-0. So I know the news and I know how it works, but the history needs to be written a certain way. And those are the stories.
I mean, we got to get her out of here. We're up on a time constraint here, but Amin, did you know that Sue Bird, when she started the whole Vote Warnock t-shirt campaign, they ran out of t-shirts before they could get Renee one. I was just texting with Sue Bird this morning, being like, wait, did I see that Renee doesn't have a t-shirt? The Vote Warnock, that she's like on the front lines of raising this campaign, this vote, get out the vote campaign. And you don't have any of a t-shirt. So Amin, how does this work? Like, Renee, what's the deal?
And you know what? I didn't even care. Like, whenever I was just happy to be in the loop, you know? And so the reason I knew that had happened is because Birdie had hit me up and was like, hey, just let you know, like, we're doing these Vote Warnock shirts. Wanted to let you know, like, the messaging, what we're doing, what's our plan. And I want people to know that, because this wasn't like vindictive and like, hey, we're just going to throw on these shirts. Like, people planned for this. Like, this was a planned out thing. They told me about it before it even happened. And I get it. You know, they were in the bubble, dealing with a lot already. They were playing every other day. They had a lot going on. They were doing a Say Her Name campaign every week. Like I said, I was just happy that I stayed connected. Like, I felt so connected to the WNBA throughout that whole bubble season, even though I wasn't in it. So that's fine. You know, I don't need the shirt. We got the vote. So I'll take a win.
Yeah, by the way, that was just his way of trying to name drop that he was Texas.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it. 100%. That's it. Hey, Renee, with COVID hitting the NBA and injuries happening left and right, you might be suiting up for the Hawks before we know it. Oh. So you gotta
keep Dominique Wilkins. He's on the broadcast with me. They better.
No, hey, he can't. Renee, he can't do back to backs though. He'll give you 15 good minutes tonight.
Not a lot of people can at this time. Not a lot of people can.
Renee, thank you so much for joining us on the Haver Show, and best of luck with everything in the future. Can't wait to watch you again on the Hawks broadcast.
Yeah, we got to have you back, and we got to talk to Hawks because we got a lot of conversation about the Hawks we got to have. But
thank you guys.
Thanks a lot, Renee.
Thank you guys.
All right. That's a wrap on this week's episode of the Haber Show. Amin, you were doing something on your phone during this episode. So, like, what were you doing? You weren't paying attention to us?
I signed up for Cameo. And so now I'm on Cameo. Cameo/Darth Amin. Just search for me there. And I got my first Cameo request while I was doing the show.
All right, yeah, let's do it. Right here. What is it? Can it be public?
No, it can't be because this one's a DM. See, they also allow you. This is crazy, man. People
can actually, you pay for a DM from someone? Can like
yes?
If you respond to someone, ka-ching, you make some money.
I don't even think I have to respond.
No, just so an inbox. You can make money off of having inbox. An inbox.
$3 a pop.
I've been doing this whole thing wrong, man.
No, dude, I'm telling you, like this is a radio show is requesting me to be on, and I'm like, you paid $3?
Crazy, man.
No, you can't tell me. No more.
How long did it take for you to make money on Cameo once you downloaded the app or signed up?
I just signed up. I literally right before we did the show, I recorded my intro video.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Thank you, Stu Gotts. I mean, he started a new
thank
economy.
Thank you, Gotts. Thank you, Gotts.
Hey, congratulations.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, congratulations on your new deal, man. That's exciting.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. Is this part of the pod or no?
Yeah, we're just wrapping.
All right, okay. Yeah, so yes, I'm excited. This is going to be fun. I had a great 8 years at ESPN. As I said in my little Twitter thread thing, like I got there, nobody knew who I was, and I leave with a much bigger platform. And there was a great pride for me to be able to tell my kids, I work for Walt Disney. I work for Mickey Mouse, right?
Yep. And I've been there, except for the kids thing, but in Ubers, I know you don't talk about yourself in Ubers, but
they rebooted DuckTales. And when they did, man, they made me my own personalized DuckTale version of myself, man. Like, I'm telling you, there's no way you can do this job at that company and not, if you haven't experienced something of the Disney magic one way or another. Maybe it's something as simple as took my kids to Disneyland and we got in the park for free and we parked the car for free and we got 40% off on merch. Maybe it's as simple as that. Maybe it's something as fun as I took my family to the red carpet premiere for a Star Wars movie.
The perks at Disney are unreal. It's for everybody. It's like, hey, you a Disney cast member, and that's the – I love the whole Disney cast member.
Where do you make your magic? So they ask you when they see your ID.
And they not only give you free passes to the parks, but you can like give them away. Like you can give it – a free pass to your brother's family. Like you can send it, you can whoever. And it's like, they don't skip on that stuff. Like they make sure people are especially families are more than delighted to be working for that company. It's unlike anything I've seen.
Man, I feel like I've made a terrible mistake now.
Yeah. No backsies. I mean,